Aid Station's been really looking after a lot of Aussie athletes, which is great. And we're stoked to have them on for our show as well as a show sponsor. So thanks to Aid Station. They're the leading online store for endurance sports nutrition in Australia and New Zealand. Whether you're a pro or training for your first event, they've got everything you need to fuel your performance. Over 1,000 products from 80 top brands, including gels, hydration, energy gear. You'll find it all in one place. Download the Aid Station app now or visit aidstation.com.au. We have got on the show Cam Wirth, longtime friend, amazing story as an athlete.
Longer time, foe.
Started as a rower, rapidly progressed through rowing to represent at the Olympic Games, moved on to cycling, sort of rapidly progressed through cycling, became a world tour level rider, then decided, all right, now I may as well dominate triathlon, and then wasn't quite happy with that, so decided to also include continuing competing as a professional cyclist while still dominating triathlon. Cameron Wirth, thanks for coming on. How are you?
That's some of the nicest things you've ever said about me, Tim. I really appreciate that. A little bit embellished, but yeah, I think I almost dominated, and then the COVID hit, and they had all these freaking super freaks appeared from nowhere. So I felt like I was on my way to total domination. I had the nice progression going up to 2019, and then obviously the world stopped, and sports looked a lot different since. But it's an exciting challenge to try and. You know, I think Matthias Pedersen gave me quite a compliment in South Africa. I think he was trying to be polite, but he said, despite your age, you're one of the very few that's been able to move with the modern generation.
Oh,
So
absolutely. Yeah,
I
it's
kind of took
funny.
that as a compliment, even though he was calling me an old bastard.
Yeah, well, you definitely are an old bastard, but I think what was interesting was through COVID, I'd always been able to take pretty big breaks, you know, through your 20s and early 30s. So I was like, cool, this is an opportunity to sort of learn my kids' names, spend some time at home. And then I came back to racing and I was like, whoa, these guys have been doing 7, 8 hour training days and I've been, you know, doing a little bit of maintenance work, and honestly, the sport had moved on. But you, I've always been a fiend for training, so you still, I think that's probably why you were still competitive after COVID. Talk to me, like when you were a kid. Obviously, we both spent a lot of time on Lord Howe Island. So you grew up between Tassie and Lord Howe Island. For those that don't know, Lord Howe Island's a little volcanic island off the east coast of Australia. And there's probably 300 or 400 people that live there. Steve's just asked for the link. It's the same link every time, Steve. This is his show. All right, I'll send him the link. Talk to me about just your childhood, you know, Lord Howe, how you sort of got active and, you know, why you think that you were quite good at sport early on. Oh, Steve's managed to find it. Go ahead.
Welcome, Steve. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, Tim, you and I grew up for a lot of those years on Lord Howe, and I think you know, you have to ride to school. I mean, we didn't wear shoes, so you I don't know what that keeps you very grounded. So you're just always doing stuff, moving about, you know, climbing things, and you know, you're surrounded by water on the island, so of course you want to get in that. You go for a swim. I mean, I guess I'm leading this. It's amazing. I never really got into the sport of triathlon, unlike you did, you know, not pretty early on, you know, when you left school, but it was always there. I guess it was kind of instilled in us from that young age, just to be active. And I remember even with rowing, I used to love, obviously I enjoyed rowing and competing and where it took me, but I love training more because you could do everything. I mean, I used to love going out to Lord Howe for Christmas, you know, visit my grandparents, and you know, you run and ride and swim, and sometimes I take a rowing machine. But in reality, I'd usually go back fitter than ever, you know, and row better than ever. You know, you had a bit of a break from the boat and freshen the mind up, but you got fit as anything. And I guess that was at a time where we didn't know anything about heat training. But I mean, it's probably 100% humidity every day and 25, 30 degrees, and we were racing around that island flat out all the time. I mean, our blood plasma volume is probably thick, like, you know, what is it, chunky soup or something, Campbell's soup, you know, since we were 14, 15 years old. So yeah, I think just growing up, you know, from such a young age, I mean, we were there when we were sort of 7, 6, 7, 8, you know, through to our mid-teens predominantly. And, you know, if you wanted to get anywhere, you rode your bike or you walked. You know, you wanted to get to the other end of the beach, you swam, you know, or you went surfing or whatever else. I mean, you were just active. Sorry.
Yeah. No,
I've just been.
Trust me, there's nothing professional about this show. You can have as many interruptions as you want. For me, Lord Howe was, I think we were also exposed to triathlon very young. You know, sadly, a young guy passed away who was very instrumental in organizing a sort of annual triathlon there. And, you know, I think we both took part when we were maybe 10 or 11. And it only takes that one little bit of like, oh, that was really fun. And you and I both towed up most of the adults except for maybe one.
Anthony Riddle, I think.
Yeah. I remember just.
It's too good for us.
To tell it, I think it's a good story, even though it's probably been shared. But you and I sort of got out of the swim near each other or close enough. And then you took
off. It was a bit like Mark Allen and Dave Scott, really, for listeners. You know, just like picture that. Picture that kind of scene at the start. Yeah.
Me on my dad's mountain bike. You, I don't know what you were riding, but then you actually got a puncher. And classic Cam Wirth style, because I said to Steve the other day when we were talking about it, I was like, nothing ever phases you. You've got this perpetual positive outlook when things go wrong. And you've just run into a resort, grabbed a rental bike and continued the race. And then
with a basket.
That's right. And anyway, just that time that you lost, I ended up getting ahead. But I remember when we finished, you ended up getting the bottle of champagne for being just for being innovative. Yeah. I was like, damn it.
And then I had to try and remember where I stole the bike from so I could return it. Exactly. It was definitely, I think the sport was instilled from us then, and this took me a lot longer to find it than you. But, you know, without a doubt, of all the sports I've done, as much as I've loved, you know, cycling and rowing and places it's taken me and event, you know, things that have happened, you know, I've never had such a drive to try and succeed as I do in try. I mean, I genuinely love it. I can't wait to get on the start line. I'm so competitive. I just want to get to the front as quickly as I can. Obviously, not being a strong swimmer, that gives me something to do for quite a lot of the day. And then if I do get there, then it's, you know, everything you got to try and stay there. And I don't really remember having that determination in any other sport. So, glad I found it. Better late than never. And, you know, people often say, oh, gosh, it's a shame you didn't start younger. I say, well, yeah, okay, I'm not naive. Maybe I'll never be the absolute best I could have ever been because I'm not doing it at 25. But I still believe I can be the best I'm ever going to be at the sport. And I don't think I'm there yet, you know, and that's what keeps driving me. I think I can still improve and still get better. And, yeah, we'll find out in a few weeks where I'm at the moment.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, and Steve can add in on this because a lot of people are now pushing kids to start young. That's my phone. Yeah. A lot of people are now pushing kids to start younger and younger, and it's a really, like, at an elite level, it's a very big commitment, right? And I'm so glad I didn't start young because I fell in love with it in my early 20s, and I feel like you've got about 10 to 15 years. As a normal person, Cam, you obviously love it forever. But I feel like that meant that I was driven. You know, I went to an N-Swiss talent ID camp, and I was not as good as most of the kids there. And some of the real talents, Aaron Royal was the only one who continued on. But some of these incredible talents, they've all burnt out by the time they get to their peak years because they've started so young, been pushed so young. Steve, do you feel like if you'd been doing it for 20 years, would you still be going?
Hell no. Nah. You talk about Cam being an optimist. I got gastro and I want to retire. I've only had it for 4 days. I'm like, oh, fuck. I running at an elite level, I guess you call it, as a junior. And I massively burnt out. I used to get really nervous for big races. So I'd go internationals ranked really high and then I'd come like last or passed out, end up in hospital just because the stress building in that week. So I was really overrunning and I quit and I ended up being the best at drinking and being an idiot for like 4 years. And people go, oh, I came from AFL. No, I just played AFL with friends and it was more about the Saturday night drinks afterwards. So that was Yeah, I think if I'd found triathlon instead of doing running at a young age, I would be done for sure by now. Like, you know, you say you peak at 30 or something, but I feel like and also, by the way, I do have gastro at the moment, so if I'm overly negative today, I think that would be why my gut is absolutely messed up. So it's good, we'll have a balance. Cam's like, Kona's gonna go so well, and I'm like, Kona was going to go really well until about 2 days.
You need to get onto aid station and find some, I don't know, some sort of electrolytes or some sort of something to replenish yourself there, Steve. missing out on the plug there for the sponsor for the show.
No, I just I came from the pool just then, and I'm like, oh, screw it. You know what? I'll be fine. And swam, and now I've just gone even worse into this. So hopefully you can't catch gastro through the phone, Cam.
So Cam, well, if I ever get sick or injured, I always just try and figure out how I can come back stronger from it. Like Tim said, I'm ever the optimist, so it wouldn't crap me off too much. I'd find a way to come out of it better than before.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna ask a few questions today about that kind of stuff, and you know, because you've got a kid as well. And yeah, I'm interested to ask a few questions about it all.
Go for it now, Steve.
Okay.
Good life.
Okay, I will. All right. Yeah. So Cam, I was in a good place post Townsville, and I'm just a pro who has two kids and other stuff outside of being a pro. So things kind of got to go perfect in a training block for the race to go well. But then, you know, then I realized not one training block has gone well for me ever. So yeah, I'm racing fairly consistently off of crap training blocks. So now that's why this gastro, I'm joking, it doesn't actually worry me that much. I know it's just one bad week, and then I've got another 2 weeks of hard training, and then I'm sweet. But in your situation, like, you know, as a pro, sometimes you get caught up thinking everyone else's prep's gone perfectly for Kona. So this is for the age group are out there with kids as well who keep getting sick leading into their races. Can you reassure them that, you know, you're a normal person too, and that you do get sick every now and then, and you just have to, how do you deal with it? And what do you do when your kid brings home something from childcare or whatever?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, isn't it, kids? I mean, to be honest, this time around, so last time, not that I can blame Wyatt on it. Well, I don't know. I mean, he was going to the kids' museums and stuff out here in LA, but I ended up getting sick before Kona, ended up getting COVID, ended up racing with it. I kind of knew it was that, but I sort of tried to ignore it. And then I had to do a test after the race more because the team were a bit curious as to why I didn't do better. And sure enough, it was that. But I this time around, he was meant to start school in Andorra, and we decided to come out to LA and stay away from the germ pool for that exact reason. Yeah. Just to, you know, there's so many people that put so much effort and time and effort into your preparation. You know, I want to be responsible for failing myself. So, you know, I guess we're in a bit of a fortuitous position to be able to remove myself from that situation. But I think when you do get run down or something or sick, you know, often it's because you are run down, and so that can the break can often do you well. I think the biggest issue is when you try to train through it, and I think that's where people can really, really, really struggle, you know, as in it gets them a lot more run down, whereas having a few days off or taking it easy, you know, especially 2 or 3 weeks out, it could be the absolute best thing you could possibly do, because that's the one time you just think you can't take it off. You think you got to train hard. You think you got to do more. And there's a much greater chance of putting yourself in a hole, and which is too deep, which, you know, and you end up paying for on rest, you know, on race day. I mean, the amount of story, I mean, Tim O'Donnell, remember in 19, I mean, holy moly. I mean, the guy joked that he nearly didn't even pack his running shoes. You know, I mean, that was more of an injury thing. It hadn't even run, and has the best Kona of his life. And so there's just so many examples of that. So I think, you know, a long answer there from my side, but
no, it's a good answer.
It's good. It's
but I think just sort of accepting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just like accepting it for what it is. And knowing that if you're healthy, that is worth so much more than a few extra crap training sessions that you try to force into your body. you know,
yeah.
like just being healthy and recovered and fresh, you know, find things you can do, you know, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, I'm like, okay, I shouldn't be doing anything. So stretch more, you know, do some yoga,
yeah.
Get in the sauna, do it, you know, do an extra heat session, you know, like read, learn about something, you know, you all of a sudden you've probably got 6 hours of the day that you wouldn't have had because you'd be out on your bike and doing something just for a few days. Like, find a way to use that time to better yourself in another way. And I think you'd be amazed at the little things you can do. I mean, I personally know, I just don't get time to stretch or as much as I'd like. I always think, gosh, I wish I could have went to yoga. I wish I did this. I wish I had more time in the gym. I mean, I find when I get sick or injured or having a quiet week, that's the time I really get on, you know, get to do those things and really feel good about myself. So, yeah, I think that would be, my best sort of advice. Yeah.
Sounds don't like be a Joe Skipper messaged the other day. I just put a story up. I think I just said chicken and rice again. Because I've had gastro for like 3 or 4 days. I'm just trying to kick it. And he goes, probably a good thing. Everyone else is going to go in overcooked and you've had an off week after a month of hard work.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I was going to say, in some ways, I've always said, like, Kona and 70.3 Worlds, you can almost bank on half the field being overcooked. You know, like, sometimes I used to sometimes think, like, Oceanside would be more competitive than 70.3 Worlds sometimes, because you just see people just, they're flogged by the time it's September, October. So, yeah, I totally agree with that, Cam. That's great advice.
Cool. Yeah. So I'll see you on the podium, Cam.
Okay. I'll save you a spot.
Cam,
hopefully there'll still be a few steps there by the time I get there.
So, Cam, I think people would be interested to know that for me, there's a few athletes that really rewrote the rules on what training could be done. And Lionel Sanders is one. I think the Norwegians, you know, obviously pushed the limit even further. But when in your first year or two of racing Ironman, like, you almost treated them like training days and were just knocking them out. And I was actually, it was you that gave me the advice, oh, don't be scared to do one for training. And I did New Zealand as a prep and then had my best ever Ironman, where some bastard still beat me by 3 minutes and took my course record. That was you. But like, I did an Ironman as a training day and then built up from there. And you really rewrote the rules on what could be done with training. And was that just sort of being naive and listening to your body? Or do you think it was more like science backed? Or what was your process in deciding what training you did?
Yeah, well, as you know, I mean, I worked with Tim Kerrison, and his theory was I didn't know the sport and the more experience I can get from racing. And he kind of knew that while I was running that slow, the impact of my body was not that bad. I mean, in reality, we know we could swim and ride that far any day of the week and probably do 20K and be fine. You know, obviously, extra 20K is taxing. But when you're running a 3:10 marathon, as I was for a lot of the first year, you know, it took me – I didn't even break 3 hours in the first year. I got close, but not quite. It wasn't until the second year I could even break 3 hours. You know, you're just a long way from your capacity as a runner. So in reality, you just weren't beating yourself down. You know, that was his theory, and it seemed to be right, because I kind of got better every time I raced. And I didn't have the experience of you guys, like, where I'd grown up, well, not you, but a lot of the guys that grow up with the racing, you know, when they come into that level, they've already got a heap of experience. So, and I was also fortunate that I'd probably even say that year, almost every single race I led. In fact, yeah, I'd be surprised if I didn't. I think maybe I definitely didn't in Switzerland. I remember, Nick Castellan led from the start, but apart from that, even Kona, you know, I actually led every race. So you're getting a lot of experience of learning how the race unfolds. And I think that's what Tim Kerrison loved. I mean, obviously, personally, I wouldn't have done it that way. I did love competing. But had I not had a coach that said, oh, yeah, that's, you know, this is a good idea, let's just keep going, to these races and learning, because I was at the front of the race. We just felt like it wasn't, I don't think there was a lot of science. It was more just learning the sport. So that I was prepared, you know, I had to accelerate that learning process the same way everyone else had when they'd grown up doing it. I just had to do it at a later age. And yeah, obviously at a pretty high level to start off with.
I guess I was wondering too, obviously with your, you know, racing pro as a cyclist as well, has that been tricky to balance in terms of, does the team accommodate, okay, these are Cam's goals, or is it sort of like, these are the team's goals for the race season, we need you to work in this race, and then if you get time, you're like, oh, cool, I've got a few weeks off, I might just go win an Ironman. How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, even just back to your last point, as you know, I was just going to say, like, one other thing is, you know, big thing with Tim Kerrick, like, if we haven't done it in training, you know, you won't do it in a race. So it was that confidence as well. So there was the race part where I did a lot of them, but I'd also train like that too, you know, and obviously the Norwegians have come along and they do the same thing. But yeah, I mean, we were doing that a long time ago. But yeah, I mean, once then I went onto the roster with the team originally. Again, this is like where COVID, you know, it happened at the end of 2019. I mean, they've been talking to me about it, as you know, for a couple of years leading up, and I was sort of on a nice trajectory with Ironman. So it was just sort of leave me alone and just keep training with the guys. But after I was fifth in Kona and everything seemed on track and I was getting on top of everything, like, we're going to put you on the roster and you can be a standby guy for all the biggest races, you know, just when last minute we need someone, you can, you know, kind of be an impact player off the bench if you like. You're always ready, you know, worst case scenario, you'll be able to collect bottles and do some work. But then we don't have to rearrange the whole roster, you know, to fill a spot, you know, and then at the final minute, you know, which can be quite disruptive. Anyway, I think sort of COVID hit, obviously. So that year I ended up just racing full time because there was no bike races. So that was great. But then, and I guess that kind of just unfortunately kind of shifted the perception around me. Within the team is, oh, Cameron's just on the roster and he's available, you know. So 21 sort of started out like that, and then it was, oh, it looks like Kona's going to happen. So fortunately then Tim Kerrison was there in the summer, we let's train for an Ironman, we trained for Copenhagen, which I won, and then they cancelled Kona, and so it was like, oh gosh. So we kind of almost gave up on the sport a bit, and so you kind of just became part of the rotation in the cycling team. You know, the next year I went through all the classics, you know, we had Dylan win Roubaix, which was a huge highlight, and then all of a sudden, you know, St. George was on, and I was like, oh, bugger it, I'll just go and do that. You know, that was literally the, you know, weekend after or 2 weeks after with no training, and then it turned out Kona was going to happen finally, which you didn't realize, so, you know, panic train for that's probably why I got sick. And then, you know, the result was okay. You know, I was 11th. And then I guess that was the same sort of concept last year with Nice. You know, it was sort of just a bit of an afterthought. And it was more just because, yeah, I guess I just, through that period where it was very clear cut that, you know, I was there to focus on Kona. Well, Kona didn't happen for quite a while. Then when it did come back, it only came back every second year. So for the team's perspective, it's like, yeah, like, everyone kind of forgot about it. So I've sort of had to sort of just fend for myself, especially regarding qualification. I mean, as you remember earlier in the year, to qualify for for Kona, I went to South Africa, and that week I did Amstel Gold Race and Flesh Wallonne, you know, so Wednesday race. And then I was on the plane Wednesday night in South Africa on the Sunday, you know, and I almost won. I mean, I was leading with 5-6K to go, and then got caught by a couple of guys, but. And then also during the year, I did Vittoria Gasteiz, and I was meant to be actually racing on the bike that week, and they said I didn't have to. So I thought, may as well go do the Ironman, ended up third there still. So, yeah, I mean, throughout the year, but because we knew Kona was on, the deal was sort of always you're available to the team, do your work up until, you know, the beginning of September, and then you're free to go and prepare for that, you know, the last 2 months, which was sort of my request, which is what I felt was the time I needed to really focus. And yet, you know, we've learned over the years, more working with the Nike guys around the running, that 6 to 8 weeks is sort of like the ideal block for me to, you know, be able to work hard before you start to, you know, get on the edge of, like you say, fit or fucked, you know, sort of thing. And so that was it. So I haven't really worried at all season about focusing on triathlon so much as I've just worried about getting as fit as I possibly can throughout the year, to now then just hone it in for Kona. So as far as this year goes, you know, this is the first time I focused on a triathlon, if you like. And time will tell if that's a good thing. Maybe I was better off doing a few other sports during the week of the race, like I was earlier in the year.
Cam, I've had this question from one of our RPG clients, and talking about race weight and getting lean. And obviously, the biggest problem that we have at the moment is everyone thinks they can look like Christian Blumenfeld and reach peak performance.
Yeah.
And so,
just on that, so we were in Ibiza last year, and everyone says he's fat, you know, they say he's so fat. And someone said, Cameron, like, go over and like touch him, see, like push him, see what happened. And I was like, I don't want to touch him. Like, anyway, so next thing, Christian's like slapping himself on the chest, firing himself up. So I thought, oh, here's my chance. I walk over and give him, I said, come on, man. Anyway, it was, I don't know, like, I've never actually walked up and pushed a polar bear or a grizzly bear or anything. But if I was going to, I would imagine that's what it felt like. It was like concrete. And he pushed me back. And I was like, I'm not pushing him again. I mean, this guy was solid as a rock. And I was like, wow. And so when everyone tells me now, I go, like, yeah, you know, like all this stuff with him talking about cycling and everyone says, oh, he's fat. I said, hey, one thing he's not fat. That guy is built like a brick, absolute outhouse. It is. Quite impressive. He's an incredibly strong boy. But,
my question was around the year. We stayed together a couple of times in Kona, the year you got fifth, you turned up at our accommodation and you were just like 5 or 6 kilos lighter than the year before.
Yeah.
How does the cyclist treat it? Obviously, they get to a peak lean race weight. I mean, I've got my own opinions around it. How do they manage it without ruining their hormones and that sort of thing for athletes that want to really potentially get lean without damaging their health?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's sort of two ways or two schools of thought now. One is the old school way, which I guess is like how myself or Geraint would do it, where, you know, you just do a bunch of low carb sort of, you know, I did one today, you know, I had a pretty hard swim this morning, but then just 6 hours just on the pedals, like just cruisy ride, and you know, you don't eat for the first 4 hours and sort of trickle feed for the rest of the day, sort of that way. And then you've got like the young generation that, and then sort of eat pretty good meals off the bike. And then you've got the young generation that'll eat just, you know, 100 grams an hour no matter what, every single session. But then they kind of don't eat as much when they're off the bike, you know, like they, so there's sort of two, I guess, sort of styles of that. But yeah, I mean, the basic concept, you know, in cycling, I mean, it's power to weight, but it used to be, I mean, they would get as skinny as possible, you know, and sort of, I guess back in those days, there was like on days and off days a lot more. So, you know, you could afford to be a bit more on the razor, knowing that, you know, the next day and have one big all out day. And because when you're like that, obviously your reserves are much smaller. So then you have the next day where it's not so hard. So you can kind of replenish it and get ready for the next one, you know. Whereas nowadays, it's hard every day. So that's probably why you notice the guys are. They generally, I mean, I think honestly, the peloton all looks a bit healthier now.
Yeah.
I think guys are carrying, you know, 1 or 2 kilos more than what they would have done in the past because you just have to have the fuel on board every single day. Otherwise, you get spat out the ass. And when guys try to push it too far, you get caught out now. Like if you don't have the raw horsepower, you get spat out of the peloton. So I guess in my case with, you know, triathlon, but first off, when I came in, I mean, I remember I just didn't weigh myself a lot, you know, because I just didn't want to get injured. I've always been paranoid about getting injured, getting sick, any of those things. I knew how important when you start the sport late and the goals I had, you know, every week is, every month is, every year is to get as much out of it. So, and then I guess once I felt like I was a bit more on top of the sport, I took more of a cycling approach. And that was obviously when I started running a lot quicker. You know, I went from, you know, high 250s down to the, you know, mid 240s. I mean, it makes a big difference when you're carrying less. So, but yeah, those seem to be the two ways, you know, it's either, you know, that historical low carb style type thing, or eating a lot while you're training, and but then less when you when you're not.
I guess the other thing I'd add to that is, and I made this mistake a few times. Like, I can honestly say most of my best races came when I was at my very lightest, especially if it came down to the run. But I've found that the times that I would only keep it there for 2 to 3 weeks and then put back on 3 or 4 kilos, I'd be fine. But whenever I tried to hold that lean weight for too long, that's when I'd start to really struggle with issues. And I was like a bit of a chronic racer. So sometimes I'd be like, well, that worked. I'll just stay lean. But yeah, I think there's a, it's obviously, you know, I've heard of Grand Tour riders that come in a little bit heavier, and then by the third week, they're sort of at their leanest, and then they do that for sort of 7 to 7 days and then put on some weight afterwards. So
No, it's certainly, I mean, that's the biggest threat is when they're lean, how the guy's getting sick. But that's, I think, why you see the guys now. I mean, I think they just, they, especially COVID, you know, scared the crud out of everyone, and the guys just keep a bit healthier, you know, to keep a bit more robust. And at the end of the day, as I say to the guys, okay, you don't want to be like, you know, 4 or 5 kilos, but 1 or 2, you know, you're only talking about 10, 12 watts, maybe 15 watts.
Yeah.
I mean, 15 watts is nothing when you feel fit and healthy and strong, but it is very easy to lose it if you go half a kilo too light. I mean, you can lose 50 watts real quick. You know, in fact, even on Tuesday, I had a bit of a day like where I mean, obviously this time of the year, I'm pushing that a bit, trying to trim up a bit, and got on the bike, was doing some VO2 stuff. And all of a sudden, and I knew it the day before, I could feel that I was like right on the edge. I was hungry, but I was sort of trying to stick to my program, and I was just pushing it a bit. And yeah, it was so much harder to do the power, like really freaking hard to do the power. You know, I had to make an emergency stop after the session to the, you know, petrol station, and, you know, really smash some calories. And you just, it's just a really good reminder, like you got to be so alert to that, because, you know, let's say you were trying to do 550, 600 watts, it's very easy to all of a sudden drop to 500, you know, like, and that's a big difference.
Yeah.
And you're only talking about half a kilo. Whereas if you put a couple of kilos on, you could be doing 50 watts more. So, I think that's so important for people to find that right balance. And at the end of the day, you know, horsepower is always more valuable than being light.
Yeah. You're pretty across all the pros at the moment. Steve, you can also add to this if you want to. How do you see the race panning out in Kona? Taking yourself out of the equation for the victory. who do you see, especially names maybe that people don't know as much about? Like when you read all the race previews, that's always the usual Americans that get named, and you know, and heaps of Euros always get skipped. Maybe because I'm not reading European media. Talk to me about how do you see the podium ending up this year, and the dynamics of the race potentially.
Well, as proud Australian, I think Steve McKenna will win, obviously. very parochial about that. I think I said to you the other day, but there's just going to be a real natural selection. You know, the swim is going to rule a lot of people out straight away. We know that, and it's happened a number of times. You know, I mean, Lionel, you know, myself, for example, you can all of a sudden be out of the race real quick with the momentum at the front of the race now, especially if you don't have a Patrick Langer 2:30 marathon to pull yourself back into it at the end. You know, just sort of, you know, swallow your poison and accept where you're at and try to bring it home. You know, if you don't have that up your sleeve, you're just out of it. So, you know, you're going to have to swim well, because the front of the race is going to move super fast. There might be some guys, you know, I mean, Dittlev, who knows, he could be in the front pack. He could be in the middle of that and the next pack. You know, there's Robert Cullin, who's obviously incredibly strong on the bike at the moment. You know, Christian Hoggenhag is another strong guy. I guess he struggled in Kona, so I'm not sure about him, but certainly Dittlev and Kalin. And then you have, you know, obviously Lalo, probably Matthew Marcotte. They're going to be at the front, and they're obviously, you're going to want to clear out. So will that come together? You know, those bigger guys, and I guess I could be in there somewhere as well on the bike. That'll be the first sort of dynamic that plays out. And then the Norwegians, you'd imagine, will find their place with probably not at the front. You know, you'd imagine they'll bide their time a bit for the run as long as they stay in touch. I mean, they would have learnt from last time, but, I mean, they've never demonstrated in the past that they're incredibly strong on the bike. So you wouldn't imagine them all of a sudden to be, you know, riding off the front of the race. I could be very wrong, but I'd be shocked. And so I guess they're going to be, you know, probably looking to, even if they are in the front group in the swim, maybe drop back to a Ditlev-led group or something if it's behind, and sort of try to get some cover to but stay in touch for the run. So I think you're just going to have a bunch of guys ruled, or a bunch, maybe not, a, well, probably a bunch, you know, a good amount of guys will be ruled out by the swim. You're going to have another bunch of guys ruled out from the bike, and you're probably going to be left with, you know, not many guys that have a chance of winning when you get on the run. You know, bar a, you know, a crazy Patrick Langer that could come from the bleachers, you know, if everyone just falls apart. Because obviously he's proven the only way he can run fast is if he gives everyone a big lead. So that's sort of going to be the dynamic. I don't know if there's any other crazy runners in the field apart from him. Obviously, we have one that was meant to be there that won't be there anymore. So that ruled him out. I mean, and then you've got, I mean, a guy like Rudy Vonberg, you know, he was fourth last year. You can't like discount that, but, you know, I haven't really seen him race this year, so you don't know where he's at. Yeah. He didn't do very well in Kona last time, so I don't know if that, you know, if it's an issue with him dealing with the heat or that was just his first time or, you know, whatever. But, you know, in theory, he's proven that he can be at the front of the race and stay there. So he's definitely a factor. But, yeah, I really think it's just going to be what happens there with that, the front swim pack, who's in it, who's not,
yeah,
how much firepower is in that next group. But I think if, unless you're in that next group, you're out, you know, you're probably out of the race. So, yeah. You know, the, because that, cause the, you know, the front of the race just moves so much quicker now than it used to. It, yeah, as, yeah,
and
as you know.
And you know, too, that second group, unless you've got some big hitters with you,
yeah,
you know that most of the media vehicles are going to be at the front group. And so
exactly.
you have to push so much more power in that second group, or if you're behind, to potentially catch up. And that's, I mean, that's the reality of having a live feed on the race. But it's a reality that everyone who doesn't make the swim has to deal with. You've got to be putting out 70, 80 watts more than that.
Oh, it's insane. I mean, I know the difference because I've been fortunate enough to be in both ends of the spectrum at that race.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you're coming back from RV and, you know, past Kauai High and you're on your own and the helicopter above you and cars and all sorts of stuff. And you just, all of a sudden, you're just vanishing up the road, you know, and you're not doing any more. I mean, everyone that's in that position says, yeah, I just felt great. It's like, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You feel it.
That's interesting. I think everyone should, you know, like, there's a bit of a learning curve that you need to go through with Kona, and Steve will probably, because he's staying with me, he might get some great advice and avoid the failure in the first attempt. But like for Apo, went into it last year, he was obviously coming off the back of COVID. And I was like, man, I think you should still race, because I feel like you just don't learn things over there without racing the event, and how the group dynamics work, where the media is. There's just aspects to that race that you need to be, you know, especially for Apo, I'm like, man, you need to be in the front three guys. He sat back in the group and I'm like, you can't be there. That's not where you want to be. Be near the front. So I guess I don't want to take you too long. What time is it over there, Ken?
6:40.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm going to take ages. So we've got, so you are, you, what are you, 40 now?
41.
Oh, what's the plan? Like, you obviously, you haven't dropped off with your performances at all, but the reality for everyone, less so for you than other people, but, you know, Father Time waits for no one.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you thinking post-triathlon?
I knew you'd ask this. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought about it too much, to be honest, because I'm still, and I guess the people that are supporting me to do it, you know, I mean, particularly Nike, they're big pushers of, we can still get a lot more out of you, you know. I mean, I probably would have stopped already if I hadn't had them pushing me so hard, to be honest, especially from a running perspective. You know, if you look it up, I mean, there's 60-year-old guys running 220, so there's no reason why I, you know, can't probably still get better there. But, yeah, there's two things to that. I mean, obviously the first thing is you want to provide a great life for your family. So that's 100% number one. The second would be trying to give back in some way. How I do that, I mean, there's just been so many people that have given me so much when I probably didn't deserve it, opportunities, you know, sponsors have stuck by you, you know, just people that have believed in you when they probably didn't need to believe in you. And, yeah, doing something, I guess, down the line where you contribute a bit back. I mean, so, and that's like a broad thing. I'm not such an angel that I'm talking about starting a charity or anything, but more like, be it in venture capital or something like that with, you know, startup funds or something like that really does interest me a lot, you know, like showing a bit of belief, having a sort of a platform that shows belief in entrepreneurs and supports them. You know, I've had some great discussions with a couple of guys actually in Australia, which I met through the triathlon community and maybe having a, you know, say if it's Tassie based or something, you know, with an element of it that gives back to the state, you know, as there's success that comes through the pipeline as companies grow and sold and whatever else. So, yeah, I definitely want to go into business to some description. That's 100% my objective. Yeah, I'd also like to, and if it's staying in sport and contributing in some way, you know, maybe it's just helping out here or there with the cycling team or with, you know, some of the national federation. I keep in touch with the rowing. I went and actually watched the rowing over here in the US. I watched the, you know, the Princeton, Harvard, you know, their national championships earlier in the year and met a couple of the Australian selectors that were there selecting the crews. So, yeah, I guess I haven't really answered the question too well, but
no, that's good.
Definitely venture capital or something along those lines is probably something that fascinates me the most at the moment. And that's probably something I'd like to go into because of the opportunity to, you know, obviously provide for my family, but potentially do some exciting things to sort of give it back a bit to, you know, the community at large. Mm.
Two final questions. This one's for Steve to start with and then yourself. You, Cam, because you really pushed me. You're like, man, you've got to go and do wind tunnel testing. And I was doing a lot of home testing, velodrome testing, but obviously it's very time consuming. Wasn't testing enough things. And now I'm absolutely kicking myself when I look
at it. Oh, where are you at with tyres at the moment? I can't decide. I don't have a tyre sponsor, so you can tell me anything.
That's I'll get to that after we stop recording.
Okay.
But yeah, Steve, you just finished your first good run of aero testing. Can you guys talk about not details, obviously not sharing things that you want to give to your competition, but what are some of the like more general things that you can get out of wind tunnel testing? What were the biggest differences that you saw that people should potentially go and test for?
I think the material on the suit, but mostly I think the suit has to be tight. So we saw big differences in watts saved between suits. Seems like everyone in the tri world, and I'm not going to say the material that's fastest, it's IP that they wanted me to protect on the day. It's like the Oz cycling sort of team has all gone through there before the Olympics, and there's a certain type of material that's faster than others. And we found that the tri world, most of the blokes are using some material. You know how you want to trip the wind with some lines. Most of the tri world at the moment are using something that tested the slowest for us. So they kept saying, obviously, it's individual. One thing I found interesting is pushing for a larger helmet. That was cool to get an insight on. They only really pushed one type of helmet as well. There was like, they just said, you know, if you move your head around in most other helmets, there's no point using them. And I know Cam is an advocate for a certain type of helmet too. So, yeah, I've probably just given that one away. But basically, that was...
On that, Steve, I tested everything. I mean, I actually went through the full sweep and because in theory, I can wear whatever I want. And, it was actually the best and by a good margin. I mean, I guess there's no surprise that a lot of nations wear that helmet. Which is amazing because it hasn't even been updated in a long time. I mean, it's a good 4 years old, that helmet.
But I think it used to only be available to the pro team, right, Kem? But now it's part of it.
Maybe that. Okay. Yeah. That could be the case. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the one you gave me and I to use in Kona, and I still used a slow one because I was worried about anyway. Just
yeah,
stupid.
That was funny. Yeah.
Cam, I learned to take advice, people. Cam, I was gonna ask you earlier. I found it very valuable. I got a CDA number and that I'm happy with, and we saved probably 12 watts on the day with a few little different adjustments in position and material that I was using for a tri suit. But my question to you would be, like, I would say that there's a lot of good bike riders now and a lot of people in and out of wind tunnels. So you kind of need to be doing this to keep up on, because of the information that they might slip up and give you in, you know, the people, the experts that you're dealing with in there, plus like, just constantly going in and finding a faster position or material that you're using.
Yeah.
So people are doing it and catch. I think there's a lot more great bike riders now, but I feel like originally there was the Cam Worth and the Lionel Sanders sort of people who were, you'd put, you know, 10 to 20 minutes into some people and it was game over.
Yeah.
But now I would say you might be able to do that, but so can, you know, five or six others potentially.
Just one thing on that point. When you go back and you look historically at the watts people were pushing, especially in Kona, there hasn't actually been a big improvement in the...
No, I was about to say that.
It hasn't at all. What's happened is people are just getting clued in and getting way faster with equipment.
So that's what I'm getting at. So they've gone into the wind tunnel, and that's the only reason there's people that can bike ride like you, because Magnus is in the wind tunnel every other week. So my question is, early on, because you were coming from a cycling background, did you have access to wind tunnels, and did you have the knowledge, or did they just, your team said, we've done it millions of times, this is the stuff and this is the position you should use?
Yeah, it was a combination. They actually had a mannequin of Froomey. Not that we're really, we're the same height, that's about where the similarities start and end. But as far as the helmets go and the suits go, as you say, we could do multiple, you know, bunch of runs, and I didn't need to be there. I definitely, in those first couple of years, I was in the tunnel quite a bit, particularly when we developed that new bike, obviously. And my position really hasn't changed much. The only thing we've kind of changed is the handlebars. And, you know, for Kona, we'll have another new set. But we've tried a few times this year. I've been a couple more times. We're trying to, you know, like everyone's doing, going longer and higher and all this stuff. I mean, it actually didn't do anything for me, which I was kind of happy about, because it's quite difficult to ride the bike. And if we get a proper Kona day, there's a lot of people invested probably quite a lot in position to be long and air fast, and they'll hands on the drops, so they won't be super aero anymore.
Yeah, 100%. I mean,
the
year that Frodo's back went, he's very stretched out position, really strong crosswinds, and he had his arm pads completely together. And I remember trying to ride like that, and my lower back was cooked every time I did it in crosswind. So I think there's a lot of value to real-world testing after you get out of the wind tunnel and realizing the most important thing is I've got to be able to hold this position in lots
And that
of-
was – and funny thing, Steve, like for me, the last time we went, it was – we were thinking we'd be able to find some stuff with a new bike, new bars, all this stuff. And while that little part was quicker, you know, similar to you, maybe 5 to 10 watts sort of depending on configuration of bottles and whatever else – what we actually found was we could actually slacken the position a little and make it even more comfortable, but not pay a penalty. So that, you know, ideally, if we do get a proper day, I'll feel pretty good on the bike. And that, I mean, that's sort of always been my approach to Kona, because I guess it's the only race that actually really, you know, would sort of prepare anything for. I mean, Tim will remember that day with Jan and the whole story. I don't know if I've said it, but I was the night before we were walking in to check the bikes, and they came out, and I had never met him. And he, I guess they were following me because I was the new guy, and he's following him, and they stopped us. And I sort of said hello. Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you. And he looked at my bike. I didn't even think he said hello. He said, that's a really shallow front wheel. And I said, oh yeah, well, it's meant to be a little bit windy tomorrow. And, you know, I just want to be, you know, I just want to have a good day. You know, I don't want to get blown off the course. I said, what are you running, mate? And he said, oh, an 808. I said, oh, yeah, but mate, I mean, you're the Kona champion. I mean, you're a much better athlete than me and bike rider. Like, you know what you're doing. Don't look at my bike. And he just was, you could see on his face, he looked white, you know. And and so anyway, we get out and I mean, get on the bike. Obviously, he's miles in front, but I couldn't believe my eyes. I mean, I'd caught him by Harvey as we're going up there, and I'm watching this guy rock and roll all over the place, and I was like, that can't be Yarn. He's bloody Yarn, you know, as we come up to him. And as I went past him, I just couldn't help myself. I looked, I said, hey, mate, how's that front wheel working out for you? he looked at me like I'd stolen one of his children and had them hostage somewhere. And, obviously we didn't see him much more after that. He admitted to me a few years later that I was quite intimidating. And on reflection, I can understand why. Like, first time I turned up to Kona and I rolled past him and say that to him. And, like to Tim's point, that's what can happen. You know, he'd obviously won the year before. I mean, as the great champion he is, he goes away and tries to improve. And you, to improve when you're already at that level, it becomes harder and harder. And he's obviously got more and more aggressive. And, yeah, you could see him rolling around on his bike. I mean, no wonder his back went. I mean, but when you're testing all this stuff, you don't, not a lot of people think of that sort of thing. So,
we went 1 centimeter lower the other day, and I found three watts, and I gave it back. I said, I don't want it. I was like,
who'd you give it back
watts.
To?
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is,
to the watt lord.
You do that, but you poke your head up and in a race situation, and all of a sudden it's not there anyway. So, you know, it's very hard to. Yeah, you've got to.
My glutes are killing me.
Yeah. Well, that's what Tim said. You know, you really got to find the balance between real world and in there. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to even change my pad width according to what the wind would be doing. So, you know, I'd go more narrow for a really calm day, and then on the crosswinds, you know, I'd be like, oh, I need some more.
I'm not laughing because it's stupid, but I remember the time that you told me you used to go for a run, and if it was an hour, you'd swap the watch to the other arm.
Yeah.
Half an hour in.
Mate, I still do that. I had another question for you, Cam, and now I cannot think what it was. Steve, you got anything else before we wrap it up?
My brain's not working. I was really excited for this, and then to be honest, I can't even think. So I'm happy I didn't say much because it would have been nonsense.
I'm just glad you turned up. The first time in a while we've had a paid sponsor for the show, and Steve's like, yeah, I'll be on. Collecting the cash. No,
I just wanted to look at Cam.
I'm just kidding.
I'm so intimidating.
Steve wouldn't even
size up his rival.
No, it looks like he's had more sun than me. So
it's warm out. It's been like 35, 40 degrees here in LA the last few days. So it's been nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. One thing I will say, everyone can see what hat I've got on. So in a week's time, I'll be running 100K for around Lennox Head. 200 people, 200 locals are running 100K. To raise money. We had a local girl, actually, one of my clients' daughter died from a brain tumor, and we are raising money to try and contribute to the research, to try and contribute to DIPG and DMG, which are the two most, you know, two really deadly brain cancer types of cancer. Don't know what I'm trying to say. But yeah, 1 in 5 childhood deaths are related to those diseases. So if you want to donate, I'd really appreciate it. Please jump on. The link is in my Instagram profile. Jump on there. I also did a promo for RPG last time, and a bunch of people messaged me on Instagram. I don't look at Instagram messages. Please email at info@rpgcoaching.com if you want to get in touch about anything. Cam, thanks so much, man, for coming on. I'll see you over in Kona. Happy to be.
Yeah, maybe we can do like a live show while we're there.
Yeah.
The week before, once we're all together. As long as Steve doesn't have the bloody spews and the poos.
Oh, Steve will be sick for sure. So,
Cam, what day are you getting there? What date?
I'm going on the 15th.
Okay, cool. I'm trying to find some people. You can swim open water right there, can you? Right where the race starts? Is that where you'd go?
Oh, as in on the course where we race? I mean, that's where everyone goes. That's the best. Yeah. I'm going to do the practice race. I always do the practice swim the week before.
Yeah, it's just like, is it a whole week before or something?
Yeah, it's on the Sunday.
Cam was even thinking of riding Mauna Kea the week before the race. And I went and looked at it, and like my longest ride in the last 6 months been about 90 minutes. And I was like, yeah, I'll come. I'll do it with you.
It's not far as distance-wise. Like just takes a while.
70K, yeah. Constant climbing. Mate, yeah. It would take me like 12 hours.
Oh, did
that
you
would
see,
be with a tow rope on your bike. You pulling me
coming
up there.
Coming down would be a bit crap, that's for sure.
Have you seen what Blumenfeld's done yesterday or whatever? He wrote.
Yeah, we've already covered this, Steve. I was doing that years ago. Irrelevant. Yeah. He's only doing it because he doesn't have any confidence in his condition.
It was an intimidation
tactic.
Oh,
that's what I was going to ask. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I've just thought of the question. Mm-hmm. Everyone was laughing when Blumenfeld said he was going to try and win the Tour de France. I didn't laugh because I know what those VO2 max numbers are incredible. Mm. I obviously have no idea about pro cycling, but I didn't laugh because of his physiology. Mm.
Or that people say he's fat.
Yeah.
No, I didn't laugh. I mean, I've said, he's a phenomenal athlete. I mean, and you would not rule out someone that's achieved what he's achieved. He says he's going to do something. You know, you got to give him the benefit of the doubt to have a shot at it. But a lot of people did in the peloton, for example. He kind of, you know, certainly, I think he pissed off he pissed off the cycling world quite a lot by sort of indicating he was going to come in and just clean house.
You did when your first year in triathlon, you said, I'm going to win the trainer.
Exactly.
Everyone was like, who is this dickhead? And I'm like, mate, just watch out. Like, he does things.
Exactly. And I've kind of always been, I think the funniest one was Michael Volgren, a Danish guy. I was into Poland and we were talking about him. We were talking about a bit about, and then he just sort of said, you know what? I'm thinking of just doing a couple more years of cycling and then I'm thinking about doing the Olympics in LA in triathlon. And I was like, oh, mate, have you had done any triathlon? Oh, no, I've never done one. I said, oh, well, mate, in all honesty, like, you'd be better off trying to do Ironman. Like, it's slower, you know? Okay, I mean, that's a high level, but we go slower. You've got a big engine, blah, blah, blah. And he started giggling, and I was like, oh, you're taking the piss, aren't you? He said, yeah, I'm taking the piss. What's this guy think he's going to win the Tour de France? Like, and I thought, okay, fair enough. So, yeah, he was definitely the laughing stock of cycling. There's no doubt about that with coming out the way they said it. I mean, they could have been much more. And I don't think it was Christian. It was more, I think, Boo, you know, his coach that said what he said. And it's a shame because it would have been fascinating to see. But what I did say to Gustav and I were talking about it. I saw him in La Sarb. I did a half Ironman there with him. And we were talking about it. And, you know, we talked about the skill because Gustav was a bit, like, concerned for his mate. You know, like, do you think it's a good idea? And I said, well, it's one thing to have an engine in cycling. There's actually a bunch of people with a big engine. But you know, one thing that a lot of guys have commented to me since I came back to the sport is that they don't notice that I'm anything different in the bunch. Like, I look like a cyclist. Like, handling your bike and riding in the right position, doing the right things is a huge part of it. And if you don't have those skills, it really doesn't matter how strong you are, you won't even get a chance to sort of show it. And I guess that was the big thing about him. People that had known him and raced with him in ITU had indicated his skills weren't that great. And, you know, to learn, maybe when I started the first time, you know, back when I stopped rowing back in 2007, he might have had a chance, you know, way back then, even at his age. But now it's a bit like triathlon. The sport has moved on so much, like, to just come in and expect to be able to, you know, even like me, luckily I changed when I did. Like, if I tried to change now, like, you tried to enter the sport now with the level that it's at, I mean, you've seen there's really good guys that don't even qualify for Kona. I mean, I'm not trying to say how great you and I are here, Steve. I mean,
if you had at the same age, if you started now, I still think you'd be right up there. I think, but I know what you're saying. Like, it's definitely... Yeah. The depth is getting greater and greater across, you know, across triathlon for sure. And cycling, but also, I can imagine.
Even more so. I mean, that's the big thing. We're seeing these big crashes. And it's not so much at the level. It's a bit like you said about the cycling, you know, the watts, the power. They're not, okay, there's a couple of anomalies, but on the whole, I mean, Geraint Thomas is still a Grand Tour podium finisher. It's not like he's improved all of a sudden, you know, after 10 years at that level. But it's just that there's more people that are really good. So that means it's even more difficult to move around the bunch. I mean, it happens so often. If you just snooze for a second and there's a pinch point coming up, the road is blocked and you cannot move in the bunch. And next thing, some team just whacks it and it's gone. You know, I mean, yeah. You are just further back than fullback. So all those bits and pieces for Christian, you know, I think probably he weighed up and certainly Gustav was a bit concerned for him. Would he be able to figure that part out? And I think that was probably, yeah, the physical part. There's no doubt he's one of the greatest athletes on the planet and he can apply that to anything. But when you add in the technical element of cycling, I think, yeah, you got to appreciate a bit like he's phenomenally good at triathlon.
Yeah.
These guys are really, really good at riding their bikes.
Can I just ask, do you guys know how Gustav got into the Kona World Champs?
He had to do that half. He actually did winner. Most of it with me. He's a past winner. He had to do two halves. So he actually swam with me. He rode with me. He started the run with me. And then he said, we're going a bit slow. He ran away from me.
Are you allowed to just, is it, does it count as the past winner now that it's, yeah. It's not every year, it's still counting.
Yeah, he's got five years.
Yeah.
Right.
Validation.
Okay, last question, Cam. Name two cyclists who either retired or current cyclists who you think could do really well in triathlon if they committed to it for a few years.
So Lewis Askey, the other day, he did a half. He's young, and he trained with Hayden Wild a couple of times in Andorra. And he, in the UK somewhere as an age group, he won it by a mile, but he ran a 1:20. Swam like 29 minutes, obviously smoked the bike, but like I think he did the Vuelta. I mean, he'd been racing flat out all season. Like he hasn't been training for it. So he's someone that's just recently popped up. And then the other one, and I'll say, okay, I would have said Geraint Thomas. We've talked about it forever. We joked about it. We'll see. I'd love to see him do one, but I don't. You know, he's sort of has realized now he doesn't want to do it properly once he stops racing this year. He tried to race for a few more years than he thought he would. But he definitely wants to do Wales one day. But the other one is Josh Tarling. I mean, he was a age group. So he was second at the British Nationals in the 200 IM at 15. That was only 4 years ago. So the guy can swim. And when he broke his kneecap, when he crashed in Roubaix, he was swimming a lot. So he runs a lot. He's run with me in Andorra. Obviously he can time trial, so he would be pretty dangerous. He actually wanted at the end of last year to do Florida with me to try to qualify for Kona, so he'd come along to Kona as an age grouper just to be there this year.
Yeah, right.
But the team kind of didn't like the idea of that. So, but who knows?
What about Richie Port? Wasn't he thinking about?
I mean, I'm not ignoring Richie. I mean, he stayed with us for a week over the summer. He was over watching the tour and swam and freaking smashed me in the pool, even smashed Hayden for a couple of sets. Just,
yeah, wow.
I mean, he can swim. And on the bike, I mean, he looks fitter than he looked when he was racing, but yeah, he does not want to run at all. So I think he sort of toyed with the idea, but he's decided he's just really happy being fit. And I think he loves it that everyone knows that if he did want to do it, he'd probably be the best, but he doesn't have to do it. he's pretty content just being fit. And unfortunately, it's a shame because obviously he would have been the one, but I don't think he's interested.
Well, Cam, that should be a wrap. Thanks, mate. You've been unreal. Thanks, Steve.
Pleasure.
I hope you feel better soon, mate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Aid station, mate. Electrolytes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm slamming everything. Last night, I just decided I went on a date with my daughter, Winnie, and I was just, you know what, I was like pretty,
how
I was
old
pretty
is she?
Good. She's three. We went on a very expensive date.
My boy's
date.
Four.
It was like
my boy's four. He likes girls.
Good. Are you coming to Kona?
Yeah, he's coming. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mine, she's not coming, but
okay.
we'll just purely because of this, I'm canceling their flights. I took her on this date and she loves spaghetti bolognese. And I was like, you know what? Done with this. I'm done with gastro. That's it. And I just decided, because I've had chicken and rice for the last few days and no fiber, no dairy. Like, I've cut everything. And I started feeling good, trained 3 hours yesterday, did a big heat session. I'm like, sweet, I'm back. So I just ate heaps and heaps of pasta with her, heaps of cheese, got an ice cream afterwards. And then I'm like, sweet, let's go. And I woke up like worse than ever and then came on this podcast. I'm like, fuck it out. So I think I know what to do. It's just going to, I just need to stick to it instead of pretending that I'm better. I was just like, you know, when you're just like, nah, I'm making the executive decision, mind over body, that I'm better.
A few days,
now.
Mate. Take a few, even if it takes a few days, it won't hurt you.
Yeah.
Read just, a book, Steve.
Exactly. Right. Read a book, do some yoga, do some ability, stretch.
I'll do yoga. Right, guys, I'm not reading.
I've got to fly because I've got the next, we've got our members chat coming up, but I really appreciate it, Cam.
Pleasure, guys.
And I'll see you both over there and let me know if you need a hand with anything.
Catch up. I will. See you, mate. Bye, guys.